Welcome to the Huntsback Country Podcast. This is a Monday Minute episode, which is our very informal, you never know what you're going to get type of episode. Sometimes we're answering listener questions, sometimes we're talking about a topic, sometimes we don't know what the heck we're doing until we hit record. This week, Steve and I talk about the reason he missed last week's Monday Minute episode, and that's because he was out hunting. It was a mountain goat hunt. It was an awesome adventure. And we'll hear about that in just a second. Real quick before we do, though, we are sending out a survey to our newsletter through Exo Mountain Gear. We're sending that out this week on Wednesday. It's going to be a survey about 2019 products. And the reason we're reaching out to you guys is because we truly care. Like, we want to know what your thoughts are, what your opinions are, whether you're an Exo Mountain Gear pack user or not. We would just love to learn more about what your ideal hunting pack looks like, what it is, what features it has, what size it is, that type of good stuff. Because we want to, as much as possible, make products with your input. Since the beginning, since 2014, we've always made changes. Those changes have always been based on our nonstop testing, on our experience ourselves as hunters, but also based off of customer feedback and even feedback from people who aren't customers. So anyway, we're sending out that survey. We've been testing prototypes for months now. We're making some design decisions very soon for the 2019 lineup, and we would just love to have your input on that. So if you want to help us determine the next evolution of Exo Mountain Gear packs, send us your feedback. Go sign up before Wednesday at exomountaingear.com/newsletter, you'll get the invite to the survey. If you happen to catch this after this Wednesday, as this podcast is released, shoot us an email to podcast@exomountaingear.com. We can send you that survey link. If you catch this podcast like a month later or a year later, sorry, we still have your input, emails, your ideas, but the survey is closed. So anyway, go do that. Check it out if you're interested. If you want to help us design the next evolution of Exo Mountain Gear packs. All right, enough rambling. Let's hear about this awesome mountain goat hunt. Steve, happy Monday, although it's Friday.
Yeah, happy Friday, Monday.
Friday for us, Monday for the listeners. So in this Monday Minute, we want to catch up a little bit. Last week you were out hunting, and at first I thought you were just deer hunting. I thought you were out doing your own thing, but then I get this awesome photo of a mountain goat, and I'm like, wait a second. A, I know you don't have a goat tag, and B, that's clearly not your mountain goat or you in the picture. But you got to tag along on a mountain goat hunt, and it's such a cool hunt. Talking to you the other day on the phone, we just, you know, wanted to chat a bit about that hunt, on this Monday Minute, because it's timely and relevant and just, a goat hunt is, no matter what, it's just a cool story, right?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Yeah, a buddy of mine, Danny, drew the you know, Idaho once-in-a-lifetime mountain goat tag, and it was the unit that was just directly north of the tag that I had in 2014. Also happened to be, like, literally the entire first day of the death hike this year was his unit. So I'd had some familiarity with the country, and he had been up scouting a bunch and gone hunting a couple times, but still, like, that process of learning how to identify a mountain goat it's hard. You just gotta look at a lot of goats. And even then, I think even really, like, savvy goat hunters have been doing it for a long time are going to admit it's not always, like, black and white when you see a goat. How big is it? You know, 'cause you're really trying to decide if on a billy is it 8 inches or, you know, 9 1/4 inches. And you're doing that at, you know, 1,000 yards to a spine scope. And that's not very easy to do, because that's the difference between a, you know, an average / small billy to a great one.
Yeah. So I'm curious, two things come to mind is, one, obviously you get a once in a lifetime tag. You obviously want to shoot, you know, good representation of the species and try and get, you know, some trophy quality if you can. But aside from that, what is, in at least in Idaho and, like, on these hunts, is there a regulation on, like, minimums for that?
Nope.
Yep. Okay. Just, so you technically could shoot whatever. It's not like you're trying to judge full curl for legality or just, you know, trying to get a good goat.
You could even shoot a nanny, I believe. And I think they do that because it is so stinking difficult to tell the difference.
Yeah.
Right. Like it's, if you didn't spend a lot of time on it or even didn't have a really nice spotting scope and you're using a rifle and you got one at 400 yards, it's not that, you know, like, there's definitely times where you got to look at a goat and see different angles and to kind of put all the pieces of the puzzle together on if it's a Billy or a Nanny. And mm-hmm. once you've done it for a while, you'd start, you know, you're going to be right. You know, your instant reaction is going to be right 90% of the time, but still there's times where you're going to get a little confused.
And you had the experience one goat hunt under your belt. Dude, yeah. That's crazy. Yeah, it was 2014. It feels like it was a couple of years ago.
Yeah, I know. Time flies. So anyways, yeah, Danny, he had been up hunting and then didn't have anyone to go with him that weekend and called me up. And I've always kind of said that if a friend of mine had a mountain goat tag, I'd be there, you know. And so I couldn't really eat my words and I made it happen. Wife wasn't exactly stoked that I was leaving again, but I promised her it'd be a fairly quick hunt and we'd get back home. And yeah, it turned out to be. So we got in there. We were really like 13 miles from the truck where we were hunting, but it was about 4.5 on motorcycle, and then we parked the bikes and
which
then walked.
I pre-scouted for you, by the way.
You did, yeah. The section of trail that you and Jake and Paul decided to go the wrong way during the death hike.
I was just checking it out, man. I knew something was coming.
So, anyways, yeah, parked the bikes, and then we ended up killing the Billy about 7.5 miles from there. And obviously, we're in the White Clouds, which is just absolute gorgeous, nasty, steep, rocky country. Every photo you take is just, you know, scenic. I mean, you've been there. It's just absolutely gorgeous. So, so we kind of went in and during the death hike, we had seen a couple goats. And so I had those spots picked out in my head and, took our time hiking in. It was interesting. That was the first time I've actually ever, Danny had a seek outside teepee and stove. And it was, I think that night it got down to 5 degrees. It was freaking cold. And, so that was kind of fun to test that out. And it's pretty cool. I could definitely see the advantage of having those stoves in that cold weather. And especially if you were to get wet, I would love if any listeners out there to have a way to keep the fire going for a long time. That's kind of the interesting part to me. Cause it's like maybe 20 minutes. Those little titanium stoves are so tiny that it gets like, you know, the tent would get scorching hot. And then if you just weren't constantly feeding that little stove, it would die down and then it'd be freaking, you know, 5 degrees in there all of a sudden again. So, mm-hmm. I've been, ever since then, I've been brainstorming like what can you do to keep a fire going for longer?
Yeah.
We took our time hiking in there and, didn't see any goats initially. Saw the first one we saw was a Billy hanging about 100 yards away from like 5 or 6 nannies and kids. And they were literally like on a knife ridge way at the top of the top. Right. Like, and you're just kind of like, that's the one problem with mountain goats is you may find them, but there's a very, very good chance they're going to be a spot. If you kill them, like there's nothing, not going to be anything left of the goat because they're going to fall off a 1,000-foot cliff. Which was another cool, we actually, hiking along and we look up and Danny looks up and sees this giant brown spot moving like right at the top of the ridge. We're talking like 10,500 feet, nothing but like shale rock, steep cliff, throw the binos up. And it's a giant freaking bear up there.
Wow.
It was wild, man. Like what in the world? Here it is, middle of October. Those freaking bears living up in the goat country or hanging out up there.
It's crazy.
I know I watched like some, like, I think it was like the Discovery Planet Earth or something where grizzly bears would go eat the moths or something up in the rocks. And I don't know if that's what he was doing or searching for something, but it was wild, man. Like freaking giant bear just hanging out up in the cliff.
Huh.
I packed my gun just in case because it's open deer season. I have a deer tag and I was like, I could have shot him. It would have been a long shot, but it, like there wouldn't have been anything left of the bear because it would have come down 2,000 feet.
Oh, man.
So yeah, it was crazy. But anyways, yeah, we got in there. Saw those one goats. I think that was all we saw that night. And we, you know, Danny the weekend before had been, only like 2 miles away from where we ended up camping, but it come in from a different direction. And so we kind of had a pre-planned out route that we wanted to do in the morning. So set up camp, hung out, woke up, beauty of mountain goat hunting is you don't, it's not like mule deer hunting where you got to be up you know, ready to glass half an hour before light. So we kind of, it was so cold, we stayed in our sleeping bags for a little bit and kind of slept in, but got up and then hiked up the canyon and spotted a billy way up in the rocks, could just barely see his head, and kind of had to climb up about 1,000 feet to get up there. Ended up being kind of a medium, smaller bear, billy, definitely not, you know, Danny was hunting with a rifle, maybe with a bow, you would have thought about going after him, you know, but with a rifle, he's like, okay, we're going to be a little bit more picky. And didn't see that one, or that one wasn't quite, you know, big enough to shoot. And then randomly, you know, it's so funny how hunts like work out, right? Like, cause we had, I guess prior to seeing that billy, we'd seen some goats all the way across the canyon. Would have been like, drop down 1,000 feet, climb up 3,000 feet. And it looked like a good billy hanging out next to some nannies and kids. But we had seen the billy above us and decided to go up to him to get a closer look. And then once I said that one didn't pan out, a little too small. We randomly, like, we're just about ready to just like, all right, well, I guess we're going to drop down, cross this canyon and climb up the other side. And Danny just caught a glimpse of a goat, like on the same hillside we were on. And instantly I like, kind of had to climb up 100 yards, get up there and bam. Okay. That's a nice, there's two billies. One of them, they both seemed nice. One of them was clearly a nice billy. Yeah, so it's just so funny how, you know, like, just sometimes there's so much luck into a hunt, right? Of just catching that one billy, movement of that one billy through this little tree. You know, why, like, yeah.
Right place, right time. Place, some right level time. Of awareness, yeah.
Yeah, exactly, yeah. Maybe there's the key to, yeah, just being aware and, like you said, just keeping your eyes open and not, I think I always get tunnel vision, right? Like, I immediately, once that we decided that one billy was too small, I was like, okay, we're just going to go to the other side. That's where we know the other one is, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. I'm sure we've all been at the right place at the right time and just didn't know it because we didn't see it, you know?
Yeah. No, I said, it's such a funny, cause who knows what would have happened if we hadn't caught that second billy and, you know, gone up the other side. We could still be up there hunting, you know? It was kind of a funny deal where from where we saw the billy didn't look like it was going to be that kind of arduous of a climb to get up there. Turns out we end up having to climb another like 1,200 feet, basically just straight up like the shale, rocky, cliffy stuff. I got a bunch of pictures I could send you could post. It was pretty gnarly country. We get up there and one of the billies, when we had last left them, because we kind of had to drop down in this little kind of crag canyon thing that like went up the canyon to get out of sight. And one of the billies was up feeding, one was bedded down when we left them. And we got up and we spotted a billy that was up higher. And our natural assumption that was the one that was up feeding. And we thought it was the smaller one, but we weren't sure. So we snuck into position, got about 300 yards away from him. And, you know, he's kind of sees some movement down there, you know, super clear, beautiful day, sun was shining on us. And looked at him through the scope for quite a while. And decide that he's just like, you know, I was really questioning the size of him again, and only at 300 yards, even through a nice spotter, it's like, it's kind of hard to tell. And he wasn't for like 5 minutes. He wouldn't freaking turn his head. He was just looking straight at us. And like I said, with a mountain goat, you really need like, you need their body size. You need, you know, like a 360 degree view of them to really kind of put all the pieces of the puzzle together on whether or not he's, you know, big enough to shoot. Anyways, like questionably decide like, okay, I don't think he's quite big enough. And then we had to like, we wanted to look for the other one. So we dropped back down this nasty little shale thing to get into the little ravine again and have to climb up even another couple hundred feet and then get to a spot where we could just see the other billy bedded. And I was like completely exposed out in the sun. And then Danny had to cross like literally rock climbing, scaling cliff, little thing to get to where he could shoot. So I stayed right there, had the spotting scope on him and was, you know, I got a good look at him, decided definitely he was the bigger billy. And meanwhile, Danny's like literally like one of those spots where if you slip, like you're going to go down the mountain 500,000 feet and, you know, be pretty banged up and bruised. So it's just kind of that whole, that's what I love about mountain goat hunting, right? It's pretty, pretty intense just because of the country that you're in. Well, he gets into position on the other side of this little thing, and I'm sitting there glassing him and taking photos, and I wasn't expecting it because I didn't think Danny was ready, but the gun goes off and literally I like jump and freaking start like sliding down the freaking hillside because I wasn't ready for it. But he makes a what we thought was a really good shot. Billy just goes over the rise of this thing, disappears. We had left our packs down, so we had to drop down by 500 feet, pick up our packs, and then we get down, and Danny, in all excitement, realizes he left his rangefinder all the way back up where he shot.
Oh, no.
So he went up, and then I actually, where we knew the Billy went, it looked like, you just couldn't tell, right? Like, it was over this little rise, and we're like, I don't know if it's nice and flat back there, or if he just fell down a 500-foot cliff. And I decided, and I was like, well, with a lightweight pack, I'm going to drop down, another probably 500 feet or so and like work my way up. And I was with the intent of like, it's possible the Billy like fell down and slid halfway down the mountain. That's what happened with mine. Or I was also scouting a route with a light pack on how we're going to pack them out of there. Cause it's not like you just throw the pack on and walk out of that, right? Like you're picking your way through the rocks and stuff. Anyways, we get up there and the Billy was, I meet Danny up there and we find the Billy and he still hadn't expired. Not exactly sure where he hit or didn't hit. But so Danny was at like 50 yards, put another shot in him and he was right on the edge of this probably 75-foot drop. And, you know, Danny didn't have a choice. He shot him and the thing just went like 90 miles an hour straight down in this little canyon, cut into the hillside, and it like, and unfortunately busted up one horn, and like it's literally 3 feet wide with like 50-foot vertical walls on either side of it, where he fell in. And so I was down below, so I was able to kind of work my way up into it, and then Daniel was up on top, and I got lucky and got an awesome picture because it was one of those deals where like the only way for him to get down was just to slide and hope that he stopped, and didn't like break his leg. Look at this cool picture of him just like just hauling ass, guns like right on his chest. And he slides down to the bottom and hits it pretty hard, but you know, he ended up being okay. And anyways, we got to the Billy. It was pretty gnarly. And then the whole time, we were in this canyon, we were literally getting hit by rocks. They were all small, like marble sized rocks, but it was just so steep and it had snowed the week prior. So things were melting and rocks were just constantly falling. So basically I kind of held onto the head because if the thing slid another 2 feet, it was going to go down the mountain a ways. So I'm holding onto the head while Danny's, you know, getting the hide off and quartering him up. And then I'm just literally looking up the whole time while on watch out, basically waiting for like a 10-pound rock to come down and knock us out. Which was interesting for sure. After about 5-10 minutes, it like didn't seem as bad, but when we were first sitting there, it was like, holy crap, man, we need to get this thing cut up and get out of here as fast as we can.
Yeah.
So we got them all cut up and it was definitely slow going. Cause I said it was like, it's so steep and rocky and nasty and we're getting hit by rocks and got them cut up, got them loaded in the packs and then dropped on out of there and took a while to get down half mid mountain to where we could then, you know, it was actually like you could just walk, packed them out. It was like 7.5 miles, hit the bikes and got home by midnight that night. So it was, it was such an epic hunt. I love being in that country. I love hunting mountain goats. Man, I would gladly go do that again tomorrow.
Yeah, that's awesome, man. You said he had busted when he fell after the shot and all that, and then you guys were able to kind of pick up the pieces.
Yeah.
What was, I mean, when you say pick up the pieces, were you talking like a couple solid chunks or he was like busted pretty good?
Got lucky at just two big chunks. Yeah. Oh, okay. So busted about mid-horn and then there's two big chunks. So, and then I haven't talked to Danny since we got home. I roughly measured him at like 9 1/8 inches. So he ended up being a really nice Billy. And it's fun hunt. This is like the epitome of high country, nasty, rocky, technical stuff, you know, and the late season just being as cold as it was. It's just fun. So
yeah, that's cool.
The whole way out of there, I'm just like, I'm like, man, this is going to be easy. We'll just freaking, 7.5 miles. We'll do 2.5 miles an hour. We'll be out of here by, cause we wanted to make sure we got to the bikes before dark. And then Danny was cracking up. He's like, man, I think you're the first person I've ever hunted with that isn't like dreading or bitching about the pack out,
Yeah.
I'm sitting here excited. Obviously I think we're well known. I'm testing some prototype stuff. And so I was excited, we had a ton of gear and between optics and rifle and all the cold weather gear. And then with the goat loaded up, I was 105 pounds ish, for 7.5 miles. So it wasn't exactly a light load. So it was a good test. Pack performed beautifully and it was awesome.
That's cool, man. I've seen like experiences of others reporting that sometimes goats can be super skittish, and then sometimes it's almost like they just don't care in terms of like human presence. What's been your experience on the couple Idaho goat hunts that you've been on in terms of, do you play it super cautious, like don't let them spot you at all, or, how aggressive do you get with that?
I think the most of that comes from the nannies and kids can very often live in places where there's a lot of backpackers in the summers, and they get used to human presence and they really don't care, right? In my experience, the bigger billies are very much aware of you. You're not just going to like walk 200 yards across an opening, and they're most likely not just going to watch you and not run out of. But they are like, they just don't have the hunting pressure that other animals do. So to say they're as skittish as a mule deer is, not even close. But yeah, when I hunted them, we definitely had some scenarios where, we're bow hunting. So we had one goat at like 20 yards, and that thing, once it winded us and saw us, it was gone. I mean, it covered a couple miles and up and down 1,000 feet easy, right? And then went over out of the unit. So I think it's just situational. Like I said, they're definitely not skittish, but you can't just like, you're not just going to walk up to them and shoot them. Yeah. Danny was approaching it very much like a mule deer hunt, like 100% out of sight. We're definitely going out of our way to get into the shadows and get into that little kind of canyon thing that shot up the cliff face to get up to them. And, I don't think it's a bad practice to be that cautious. It was probably a little bit more cautious than I think we had to have been, but at the same time ended up being successful. And it's always, better be safe than sorry. So, they just don't have the hunting pressure, right? I mean, it's just, they just don't have a major reason to be scared of you, and those goats as well are, that's definitely, backpackers in that country, and they're used to seeing humans walk below them, usually 1,000-2,000 feet below them. So I'm sure they, have a comfort zone. If you get too close, they're going to work away from you.
Yeah, man, that's so cool. As you said, whether you have the tag or not, just being a part of a hunt like that and being in that country and that whole experience, that has to be awesome.
Yeah, it was freaking great experience.
Cool. That's awesome, Steve. Thanks for sharing. Listeners, as always, thanks for tuning in. We'll be back to regular scheduled programming this week. So another full show dropping on Wednesday. Actually mixing it up quite a bit, we're going to talk about whitetail hunting and hunting quote-unquote mountain whitetail out in the east. So I guess Steve Flores does a lot kind of like out in the Appalachians and things like that, and it's really interesting to hear about his tactics for whitetail and how it's a blend of mountain hunting for his area and then kind of classic, whitetail tactics. So we know we have a lot of listeners in the Midwest and the east, and obviously there's western opportunity for whitetail as well, so it's pretty interesting and kind of mixes up a lot of what we've covered, and we get more into scent control and things like that that we just don't talk a lot about in terms of Western hunting for like elk and mule deer and things like that. So tune in Wednesday, check that out. And as always, have any feedback, hit us an email to podcast@exomountaingear.com.